You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision. By WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. Welcome aboard, 8 after the hour, time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Back in the studio to start a new year, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Live. In the flesh, baby. Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, January 11th, 2024, and we are talking about it. Like the day is right. What, Prout's actually alive? He's in the studio. How did that happen? Well, you know, it is the new year after all. Well, it's great to be here. If you do have a question of a financial nature, today we're going to be talking about business transactions, but our phone number, if you would, Ron, is...
You can telephone us at 231-947-0023. You can also send us a text message at 833-728-1140. That's 833-728-1140.
Appreciate it much. And joining us today, too, is Heidi Cartwright, our own RICP. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. It's great to be here, a brand new year.
It is.
Looking forward to all the things we'll talk about.
On the way to some weather, apparently. You know, they're threatening us with winter weather. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Windy stuff. And joining us, too, is Deanne Jennings. Welcome, Deanne.
Welcome. I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited to be back in the studio. Thank you for welcoming me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And then Nathan Prout, too. Hello there, young man.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Good to have you.
Who's left back in the office then?
No one. It's quiet.
Don't worry about it.
Who turned out the lights? Yeah. And to our own CPA, John Sluice from Intrust CPA. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. Before we get started, we have a couple of announcements. There is a Lunch and Learn next week, which yours truly is teaching, called New Year's Financial Resolutions, January 17th. Lunch and Learn, free. 12 to noon, January 17th. Call our office if you'd like to sign up. I have all the information here for those who want to see it. It's right here. See, Rob?
I see that right in front of me. Look at that.
All
January 17th, Lunch and Learn. Yeah.
And I'm particularly excited about this because I dreamed this up myself.
Hmm.
And it's already in print form and ready for the class.
Who's the speaker?
Yep.
Dennis Prout.
Oh, I know. Okay.
Yeah, him.
But we
he
have...
is speaking, the whole class. Can he talk for an hour? Oh, give me. Let me add it. So all kinds of things to discuss. Budgeting, retirement planning, understanding the impact of inflation. Even though inflation's gone now, right? Is inflation all done now, Ron?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
Just curious.
It's down.
The effect of compound interest, retirement accounts, understanding Social Security. So much in so little time. I mean, we are going to be jamming. I'm a little excited about it. Thank you very much.
And you do serve lunch, correct?
We do lunch.
Lunch and Learn.
Yes.
Okay.
It is a lunch at our learning center. Got two big screens there, and there'll actually be information up there for you to glean and make your own notes. So planning for the unexpected, estate planning, savings, goal setting. My favorite part, goal setting. So we've got lots to discuss there as well. And looking forward to it.
We have a couple more coming up after that. In February, I believe we have one on real estate.
Yes, Holly Hack is going to be discussing downsizing for upscale living with Holly Hack, February 21st. And then Social Security, March 20th. Bob Simpson is actually coming to teach the class for us.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of people have enjoyed when we've had him on the show. So here he's coming and he's going to be teaching a class, and you can ask questions of Bob why he's there. And we think it'll be exciting because there's always a lot of questions about Social Security.
So you get to see him live and in the flesh. He is a real person and he knows real things about Social Security. And we have a question. A note.
Inflation increases more than expected in December. I thought I'd pass that on since you just brought that up. Breaking news, as they say.
Looks like the CPI ticked up slightly over 0.3% last month. An increase from the 0.2% seen in November.
Okay.
So prices rose 3.4% over the prior year, an increase from the 3.1% increase the month prior.
So inflation not gone.
It all adds up.
It does. And probably overblown in terms of them thinking it was going to even out quite so quickly. But that's another subject for another day. Now, last week, there was a report of, public information of the Marsh Brothers transferring their business to the Sierra Group. And that brought up a whole lot of other conversations, including our own, about thinking about this. And John Sluice had just written an article for the Business News, and we thought what a great time to begin the discussion and or to continue it in some respects about what's going on with this and what's happening on the business front. And the stats were stunning to review. It's very interesting just to think about, and Deanne's going to weigh in a bit on this too, because she is our stat person here, our official stat person. But we are nearing retirement age. Baby boomers own about two-thirds of businesses with about employees in about 4 million companies. So they own about two-thirds of them, Ron.
Mm.
And an estimated 83% of them are expected to change hands over the next 5 to 10 years, according to Security and Financial. Now, this is a while back. But also, 72% more stats of business owners with revenues from $250,000 to $20 million, that's a pretty wide sector, are taking no action to exit. John, aren't you shocked?
I am shocked by that, actually.
I have no exit plan.
Which
is surprising.
Most business owners will exit within a decade. Now, this is from a study done in 2016, again, by Security and Financial. 29% expect to exit within 5 years. 54% anticipate being gone within 10.
Mm-hmm.
Selling or transferring the business is the most likely exit strategy. 37% want to transfer the business to a family member. Son, I've always liked you the most. You know, that sort of thing. Or daughter, you know, whatever. 25% want to sell to a partner or key employee. 25% want to sell through a third party. 10% expect that would mean like a quarter, right, Ron? A quarter want to sell to a
25%?
Party. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I believe
something
so.
Like that.
Yes.
10% expect to close or wind the business down.
I'd actually say that seems, I think, more here in Northern Michigan fall into the wind down. They just don't assume they have a value in the business. Mm. And I always hit my head against the wall because I'm like, you have something. You've spent years and years building it. So even if it is to another employee, to our competitor, to someone else, there is something there.
John, repeat that. That is really good.
Yeah.
And I had actually thought that almost blandly as I was reading this. Are they sure there's no value? And right. You would confirm that.
Yeah, and I would actually, my observation is that more than 10% believe there is no value there, that they can't sell. They would say they have value for themselves working, that it's given them, you know, benefits while they're there. They've gotten enjoyment out of owning others, but to be able to sell it, they just, the dauntingness of it, the size of just the process of doing it, not knowing how to do it, or that they don't think there's someone that would be interested in buying it.
So they may be tired. They may have just been doing this for so long that they say to them, they've discounted the value in their own mind, mm-hmm, in some respects, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a better chance of seeing value in the company you're selling it if you own real estate that it's on, the real estate that it's on or occupies?
That's a factor. Oh. I wouldn't say it's the only value. In fact, it's part of the factor, but most of a business is the goodwill that comes along with it, the customer list, the cash flow. I mean, and we could probably get into that, but that's really what you're valuing is the future cash flow. So the real estate is there, but so is equipment. So is the inventory. There's accounts receivable. There's all different things that factor into when you're selling a business.
Is this always about money, John? I mean, really?
Mm. Well, generally, yes. It does come back to it. But, you know, there is more to it, though, too, because a lot of people sell businesses and they might take a lower value because they know who it's going to. And that, so it's not always about money. So money plays into it, but finding that right partner, that right group that you're going to sell to is so important.
And I think there's a lot of people who really care about their businesses, and they like John said, you know, it is about the money, but it's also about taking care of their employees and preserving that reputation of that business that they built in town, and who's the best steward of that.
Mm-hmm.
The best steward. I love that. So what are the factors, Deanne, in driving this thing?
Yeah, there's factors driving the surge. One is retirement age. Two is financial security. Three is family succession challenges. And four is market conditions.
So all those can raise issues. You know, we've got no family that can really take this thing on, or, you know, the market conditions are really favorable right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a significant factor, perhaps.
We're favorable.
The
They're
value
going
of the
down,
markets.
Yes,
yeah,
it's or changing.
So it may be changing, perhaps.
It is.
About
with the interest rates going, with interest rates increasing, the value of businesses are going down.
So you're seeing that directly.
Oh, yeah.
And you're seeing also an increase in the number of inquiries in your own practice as well, you'd mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of what we work with, and what I do is on the business sales. Like you said, we've got retirees that are selling, that are looking to sell the business. But then there's also individuals that are looking to purchase, that are wanting to move up to this area or come and find things. So it's both sides.
So I think one of the most interesting points that you brought up in our conversation we've had already this week about this very show was prepare ahead of time for sale. And I was surprised at this. What you said was know the why and the when to exit. So some of this, for some folks, maybe I just need to go sit in an accountant's office, perhaps, and get away from the business and get some perspective on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Generally not in tax preparation time.
Absolutely, they would say that.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke about it, but generally speaking, I ask when a business is starting, I'll ask them, when are you thinking of selling, right? So the day you open your business, you should think about the day you're going to close or sell. And that factors in of how you do it, how you run it, right? If you're a tech company that plans on flipping in a year, is a very different approach than someone that's going to hold and grow for 40 years. So having that plan, it's not like you have to have a detailed plan on the exit strategy of that day, but you're going to have, it's going to make decisions and change what you do based on what your exit strategy is.
Of the people you see, if you can state this or if you can recall, probably can, the average amount of time that a business owner has owned a business that you see in Traverse City, what's a good estimate?
I'd be guessing at this, right? But I would say that you're going to eat... The median versus the mean is going to be very different in the sense that you probably have several that own for a year or two and then close versus you've got ones that have owned for 30 or 40 years. Yeah. I think it's generally in the spread between those two.
So somewhere in the 20-year period or
would
so.
Would be the average.
Okay. Yeah. So prepare it ahead of time for the sale. Start discussion 3 to 5 years prior to sale. What are they going to talk
so
about?
That is so important. To be planning 3 to 5 years ahead.
So what are they going to talk about if they're 3 to 5 years out?
Well, you're starting to position the business to sell, right? So you're doing different things. So one example would be making sure that your accounting systems are ready to sell, that you've got the contracts in place, that things are locked up, that you've got your employee agreements. So you're starting to clean. I'll use the word clean. Like in theory, you should be doing it all along, but you're really looking at your processes and you're really with a different lens, right? So when you're operating a business, you're doing procedures based on operating. But as you start to look to sell, you're going to want to shift your mindset a little bit to say, okay, well, what is it going to look like when someone comes in to review all of these items? Because that's what they're buying. They're buying all these things. So you shift your mindset of what you're looking at and how you're looking at it.
So to me, this kind of looks like someone else is writing the article and the paper, and you have to present the material for it, you better have your facts straight.
Right. Yep, facts straight. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so having...
And know how that you want to present it, because you're going to be the one that's presenting it, and so you don't want to have it be a reaction. You want to be on the forefront and giving them the right information versus reacting and being caught off guard.
If it's going to be, it's up to me. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So taking personal responsibility, which most business owners I know do that every day of the week. So thinking about it, turning the focus or the perspective a bit and thinking about what they're going to be looking for.
Right.
They know and love you,
right.
But they need some backup to the fact that you've got a great business.
Right. I think another one you're going to be start talking about is this is going to be probably the single largest transaction that you would have in your life. Or if you're a typical small business owner, and when I say small business owner, I'm not saying the size of the business, right? You've got the Marches, you got others. But it's going to still be the significant transaction you have. So probably the most tax that you're going to be paying. And it takes time to plan for that and to know, because it's going to make a big difference. 1% change on a $5 million sale or a $50 million sale or a $50,000 sale makes a difference, right? So planning and knowing how you structure it is going to be important.
Well, you know, John, that's really interesting. And when I was reading your article that you had in the Traverse City Business News, you were in one of the paragraphs, you talked about cash is king and how important it is. So that sort of ties in with, like, not only prepping your business and who's going to take and stuff, but prepping your financial situation or your financials, your balance sheet, your income statement, but also how much cash you're carrying. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and when I say cash is king, I also mean the cash flow of the business. So not mm-hmm. just necessarily the balance that you have in your checking account. I'm talking about the fact that you want to generate business, right? So which is going to be worth more to someone? A business that has zero profit or a business that has $100,000 in profit, right? Which are you going to be willing to pay more for? The one that's more profitable, because ultimately as an investor, so the buyer looking to purchase it is going to be willing to pay more if they get a bigger return. It's the same age old if you're looking at a publicly traded company or a closely held company. The value of your business is derived based on how profitable it is.
Well, so this can benefit a business owner, obviously, if they lengthen the time. Let's say they get they've got all this under control, and they say, "I'm still having fun. Mm-hmm. I've kept all the details together, but it's making it perhaps even more fun for me." So even though I'm 70, I might do this until I'm 73 or mm-hmm. 5 or whatever.
I can't tell you how many times discussions I'll have where you start and they say, well, I want to sell in 2 years. And the value that they've increased has made the life work-life balance that much better. So it increased the value of the business. Plus, they've enjoyed it so much more that they stick around longer, which exponentially increases the value of the business. And it just spirals from that way, because work-life balance and happiness.
Could be worse things. I love this. So it's not just about the act of selling. It's also creating the value and perhaps even better balances
mm-hmm.
for you and your family and for those around you.
Right. So a typical one would be, say the business owner says, well, you know what? I want to step back a little bit and spend more time with the grandkids, or I want to spend more time traveling. You're like, mm-hmm. great, do that. Do put that as part of your goal of saying that you want to spend 25, so the 2 months of the winter in Florida. Do it. Put your management team in place and step back. Now you've done that. So let's say that happens. A, you've increased the value of the business because now you've demonstrated that you can step away.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, you've gotten that balance that says, hey, you can go spend the time in Florida like you or anywhere mm-hmm. like you wanted to, or spend it with the grandkids. And now all of a sudden you have that work-life balance, and it allows you to keep going longer in the business and continue to spiral upwards from there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Cool stuff, eh, Ron?
I heard a business consultant years ago say to a young entrepreneur, you should have an exit strategy as part of your business plan.
Mm-hmm. Everyone
and
should.
You were echoing that today. And when I first heard it, I thought, what do you mean an exit strategy mm-hmm. when you're first starting? But he gave an example. You don't want to call it Ned's Bait Shop. If you're going to turn around and sell it, you want to call it maybe Acme Bait Shop. Mm-hmm. Just small mm-hmm. examples like mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to think, like, when you're just getting started. It's like, well, am I setting myself up for failure if I'm already thinking of how to get rid of the business? You know,
right.
I mean, I can see how that mindset, it's difficult.
It is hard to at first think about that, but then as you look at it, and say, just because you think about it doesn't mean you have to do it. You're absolutely correct that it does at first blush seem silly, but once you look at it, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Honestly, as you're talking, I'm thinking, I remember when I set up our business checking account at NBD Bank right here in Traverse City in 1990. Wow. It brings back memories, and I'm sure you get some of that in your conversations with business owners as well, too, John.
And that's just fun, too, as you start talking with individuals that are looking to sell. There's a nostalgia with it, too. This is a big part of who they are. Also, getting back to that 5 years, you don't just turn around and sell something that you created for so many years overnight, because there is a grieving process that comes with it. There is a what am I going to do afterwards process. So you ask, is it all about finances? No, because you're going to have to figure out, what am I going to do? I spent 50, 60 hours a week doing this. It's not going to happen overnight. So
it's been my or our whole life. I mean, we're going to have to make the transition. And how are we going to do that? What's it going to look like? How do we plan for this? How do we think through it?
Well, and it's your
Those
identity.
May be some of the most valuable conversations or things that business owners can think about.
And for many, it's their identity, right? So who are you as you are defined by your business?
Yes.
And so shifting that mindset as well.
It's a big one. I love it.
We're going to get a phone call in from the Upper Peninsula now.
Okay, let's do that.
For the panel, Ben is on the line. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ron.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. We had a small business for quite a few years south of the bridge there, down not too far from your neck of the woods there. And a lot of what the gentleman is saying is true. But, you know, when you start your business out, that's what you always hope someday you're going to sell it or pass it down to the family. But you got to be careful when it's time to put your business up for sale. There's certain businesses that you got to be careful who knows it, because your competitors, you know, can easily use that against you. It'd be like, and we weren't in the restaurant business, but if I had a restaurant, you know, I wouldn't want people to know that it was for sale. I think we all know when you pull up to a restaurant and you see the sign in the window for sale, you'll see that every now and then. It's like, well, do you really want to eat here? You know, they're checking out. What's their intentions? To really give you some good service and so on. So I think you got to watch who knows, because your competitors, in our situation, if they would have known, I'm sure they would have told our customer base that, hey, you don't want to buy from them. They're looking to sell. But just on the other side of the flip coin, it was our competitor that wound up buying us out. So you got to be careful how you put that information out there. It can hurt you or it can help you. I just wanted to mention that.
Appreciate it. And a good point, Ben. Thank you.
First-hand experience.
Those are great points. I mean, the confidentiality in a transaction like these is you know, paramount within it. And so, and how you approach it. And I think that gets into a little bit of knowing who you work with these transactions. I think, Dennis, that was a question you asked me early on, is what's something that they should know or people should know. It's that you're going to have to rely on professionals for this. Again, it's one of it's probably the single largest transaction you're going to be doing. So you're going to involve many professionals and that work within that specifically. So attorneys, accountants, transactionists, insurance, throughout the whole process, there's going to be individuals. And being very careful that they're working with ones that aren't going to just willy-nilly throw out information and otherwise. I mean, it's huge.
That has to be tricky if you want to be be confidential, but maybe you want your competition to buy you, so you have to approach them.
Then there's NDAs that get involved, and then there's generalizations within it, so you can pull the information back and present different informations. And there are different ways of presenting that information. So you can do stick it up on a website and say it's for available with just a different picture, or you can very quietly approach. There's so many different ways that go into it. But there are, a transaction up in here or up in northern Michigan a little while ago was Clark Manufacturing. That's a huge, gigantic one that no one knew about until the day after it happened.
Who bought them?
I don't.
Was it locally, or did somebody buy them?
Yeah. And so that's one where it is very possible they have a large transaction like that. And it's shown that it went very well afterwards, right? Because it disseminates the fear, gets rid of the fear as you, when you walk through. Because what he was alluding to there is there's so much fear. It's, okay, are they going to go away? To the employees, to the vendors, to the customers, to all the above. So,
Century LLC acquired Clark.
Who did?
Century.
Century, okay. Yeah. So having appropriate non-disclosure agreements in force is always a significant part of this transaction. Absolutely. Good point. Next, selling the business doesn't mean exiting the business. What does that mean, John?
Well, it can, but it can mean that you exit, but oftentimes the buyer wants the former owner to stay around for a while to make sure the transition happens. If it's an SBA transaction, they have a limit actually for a year. You can't go more, but some go longer, some go shorter. So that's the typical just as, okay, I want to be done, but I'm going to help transition the business. It also is possible, especially if you're selling within the family or others, is that you can sell the business and stay around for 10, 15 years, right? Or longer, where you can just transition it to the next generation or the younger generation or to others. A third example would be, and this is common in the medical practices, so say dentists, dental groups, physician groups, others, where you might sell to Munson, or you're going to sell to the conglomerate groups that are there. It's going to be more efficient, so you become part of a bit larger group that's involved, and so there's benefits there where you're still working. You might work for another 15, 20 years, but now you have a joint group within other physicians or other professionals.
So you want to lighten up on the responsibility, but you want to continue to remain engaged in that particular career.
Mm-hmm. And it's a point that you can get a cash infusion for yourself, but then you can also get value, continued growth as well. So there's synergistic relationships and others.
Oh, certainly. Obviously, if you ran the business that long, you can bring a lot of expertise and, you know, the where the rubber hits the road, if you will, the community information that's so critical in continuing that. The goodwill that's been generated over the years,
and that you see those oftentimes too. When you, as a, like a professional, let's say, let's continue the discussion with a physician. You just want to be a physician. You don't want to worry about payroll or HR or legal or accounting. You just want to do what you want to do. So that's another scenario too.
Very good. Next point: taking stock of the business, the size of the enterprise. Go into some more detail on that.
Well, I think that gets into a little bit about what I had written about in the article there, of just knowing the size or knowing the type of business and the size of business you have is going to dictate how you sell it. And then also where it is in the life cycle of a business, right? So if you're selling a business that's a startup company, it's going to be very different in how you approach the sale than it's going to be one that's in maturity versus one that's in the waning period of it, because you're going to focus on different things and you're going to have different targets and otherwise. So if you're a startup company, you're going to want to sell to someone that wants to grow. They're going to want someone that they want to have a lot of the energy to continue on and can see where it's going. If you've got one that's established, you might have it more of a maybe a family investment group or something like that. They're just looking for the cash flow. They just want the steady, consistent cash flow. Or if you're looking for an entity that is on the, I'll say, waning period, you're looking for a group that's going to try to re-energize it or maybe be able to take some of the things and pull it into their systems that would make it more helpful for them.
Now, next, the tax point of view. Earnings decrease a little was your comment, but taxes can decrease a lot. Tell us more.
What I was getting to on that side is post-transaction, it's not uncommon for my business owners to end up with more cash flow in their pockets after they sell than before, and that's just how you structure it. So that might be structured such that it's maybe a 5-year deal or a 10-year deal where they get involved, where they're, instead of taking ordinary income, they're working all these years, they're having wages, which is probably the most inefficient tax way to make money, as well as ordinary income, and then it shifts into capital gain income. So you're now getting, you've sold a capital gain, which is your stock or whatever, and you're getting that income, which is taxed much more efficiently. So you might find that your actually net to you cash is higher than what it was before when you were earning.
Darling, we're going to make more even when it was where I was working.
Hello.
So crazy stuff. So in essence, ordinary income means 100% taxable.
Ordinary is taxed at a higher rate.
Right. Well, depending on your tax bracket, but it's all taxable as it comes out. Now, what tax rate is applied to that is another story, but it's 100% taxable when it comes out versus the capital gain property, which could be taxed at maybe 20%.
Yeah, 20 or 15 or zero.
Zero.
Not zero, but
zero is not necessarily your hero, but it could be here. Now, that is really something. So in terms of paying some tax, do you like your people not to pay any tax, John?
My goal is to pay as little tax as possible.
I have a perfect question from a listener.
Yeah.
Someone said, my parents sold their 30-year-old business in 1987 for $990,000, and immediately they were hit with a $350,000 capital gains tax. Could that have been avoided?
Yes, potentially. I'm going to answer that a couple ways. One, this is where I will counsel my clients as well and say, I answered that very carefully, which says I don't like paying a dollar more in taxes than I need to. However, I love paying taxes because what that means is you just made money, right? I want to pay the lowest tax possible. But if you're not paying any taxes, that means you didn't sell anything. You don't have any income. So if I have to write a check for $1 million in taxes, well, congratulations to me, because that means I have the income necessitating that, right? Now, I don't want to write a check any bigger than I need to, but having to write one, if done properly, is an okay thing. Now, specifically on that question, probably what happened is they sold it all in 1 year, right? So if you said it was, if it transacted in one particular year, you're going to be at a higher tax rate, right? So you've heard me talk in the past, it's about knowing your tax brackets and knowing that you're spreading income out. So planning accordingly and maybe having some sale before and some after. So when you recognize that is really important, because you might be going along at 12%, 12%, 12%, 37%, 12%, 12%, 12%. So if you can spread that out a little bit through maybe a deferred gain or otherwise. Now, there's pros and cons with that too. So don't hear what I'm not saying. Sometimes that's the right thing. But there are other times where you might want to spread it out and pull it into different tax brackets over a longer period of time.
So it may be some more risk from a business owner standpoint in having a continuing interest in the business. In essence, they've used the business as a security for that loan that the owner, that the new owner is buying from them. But if it's constructed properly, from a tax standpoint, that can be a huge benefit.
Yeah, and that's and that. Let's go back to the physician group that's selling, or is the one that you're going to stay around for another 15 years, right? So you're you've sold, you've recognized some of the equity, but you've also or some of the cash that you get paid, but some of it might be in the form of equity in the new entity that you're working for. So now you're deferring it further along, and you're delaying that. It also could be there's. People immediately go into a contingent sale, which goes up or down based on the future use. It doesn't have to go that far. It could be a known sale, but you take a note, right? At that point, you're a bank, and then you can collateralize. And there are things that you can do and structure it appropriately. So,
attorneys,
options,
accountants, options. What are my options in this transaction? Asking those types of open-ended questions to your advisors.
That's the key.
What other things should I be thinking about? I mean, that's gotta energize you, honestly, from your side of the table.
Tom. I get geeked on this. This is the fun things, and these are like if I could. I mean, there is potential, and I'll throw a 1202 gain out there as a possibility. The idea of being able to use one of those, which is you could potentially have a tax-free sale. Imagine a tax-free sale. Now, I also want to tell you that probably doesn't happen very often. However, thinking about that option and the pros and the cons of what it would take to get to that point is amazing. Again, that may not be for that's not for many individuals or businesses, but there are other things that you can work your way through and strategize and plan for.
Check. We need a mic.
Oh, okay. We got Sam. Hello, Deanne.
Hello, Ron. This is such a good example, though, of how you really should seek out a professional to help you navigate the sale. You know, and John, like you were saying, the three stages of selling, there's the pre-planning and then the during and then the post. And the fact that you even know that or think about that and help someone navigate through that, this is a good example.
Absolutely. And you even just brought up there the post side of it, right? So a lot of people focus on the event itself. And then if you're really good, you're going to focus on the beforehand. Very few people post on the post, right? And that the post, the transaction is as important on how you handle that. So who's going to be around, what's going to happen to help transition that? Because ultimately, that's what you sold, right? So you sold employee base, you sold customers, you sold other things. Well, keeping those intact is so important. Making sure that the deal works its way through, too, is so important.
Well, yeah, not only from the business seller standpoint, but, of course, in the business, new business owner, that can be an ability for the new owner to work with the current people. So there's got to be some kind of an amenability, if you will. To me, I'm thinking camaraderie,
and they've got to get along. I mean, that is one of the key items that I will share with when individuals are talking about selling is when you look at who's going to acquire your business, knowing the fact that it's a long transaction that you're going to be doing and you have to be able to get along with them. So you might be willing to take a lower value on what you're going to sell to know that you're going to have that ability to work together is so key, because you're going to, and especially if you're going to have a long-term relationship, right? Having to work with them after, there's a trust factor that's going to be involved. And there's deal fatigue in these, right? These go for 3 years, 2 years. They can go a long time. And the purpose of that is to find the best value for both parties, which oftentimes is the opposite, right? There's pushing and pulling. The accountants and the attorneys are in there doing the best that they can for them. You're doing things. You just want to be out there doing your business, and your accountant's asking for 47 schedules in order that you have to pull together. You're like, I don't have time for this. And there's all these different things that get in the deal fatigue. So making sure you keep in mind the long-range goal and knowing that you're doing this because you enjoy working with the group that you're selling to.
And sometimes a business owner, seller, or buyer is going to have to overrule their advisors. No, that's not, we're not going to go there as a for instance.
You can. I mean, it's, well, I would tell you, I tell my clients too that my role is to find the best, to give you the best advice, and you're supposed to hear it and listen to it. I'll oftentimes say, my role is to tell you the tax advice, but I don't have to live with you on Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas Day, right? And so you can take what I say and say, thank you, but that's not what I want, right? I might say selling to this person is not, is going to be a worse tax advice than it is selling to this person. But if you don't like that person, person B, then A is the right answer for you. It didn't make tax sense, but it made sense for other reasons.
If it costs a bit more in a transaction, but obviously then the relationship improves and you may be in an improved position later on anyway, try to look at the long ball, if you will, in this sort of thing is what you would advise.
Absolutely. Don't lose the deal for the don't lose a dollar for the penny, or however you want to say that.
Sure. Thing, so. Excellent. Yeah.
Do you sign a NDA, non-disclosure agreement, when you're helping your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yep.
And if it was just a trust, an in-trust thing, or if you actually
a big part of it is a trust thing. But yes, so what I work under is confidentiality. Same with the attorneys, and same with, and I have different non-disclosure. There's different attorney-client privileges versus as a professional, as a CPA versus an insurance versus others. We're all bound by different laws and different regulations. But within that, there are different levels of non-disclosure.
So not everyone has the luxury of and or has thought about this transaction 3 to 5 years before. How can you help someone who's maybe been proposed, hey, we want to buy your business, and they don't feel ready? They're not ready with the numbers, or there are other factors going on here. How would you advise someone like that?
Well, for one, just know that just because best case is to plan 3 to 5 years, it's quite common to have it where I get told the day of or otherwise. Like if I lived in my perfect world, it's many, many planning years, but it does happen pretty regularly. Well, one is just to know that, to talk through what's going to happen, right, is just to understand, because, again, this is something that people don't typically do, right? Mm-hmm. And so just talking to individuals that live in the idea of having transactions like this can explain what's going to happen, what to expect, how it's going to go through. So have that understanding of it.
How would a business owner know what other business owners should be getting in their particular craft or area of business to compare what their value should
be? You can get a business valuation, just like you can get an appraisal on a house. You can get a business valuation done. There are experts in that. We do them. Others do them. Others, right? So I do one methodology. There's others in town that can do it. You can get them from wherever, their business valuations.
We're going to have some other conversations with others who are already at the process, given your advice on that one, too.
See this, Dennis. We have people come in to see Dennis and I, and they're starting to think about retirement, but like you said, John, you pointed out that this may be the largest asset that they have, and they may have poured all their hard work into it, and so this becomes what funds their retirement.
Right.
And so that's how we work together with our clients and with John, is to put all those puzzle pieces in place to try to get the best results so that they can go forward with their next adventure.
Right. And then within that, I would say when they come is knowing where they are in the discussion of the transaction, because if the deal's done, then it's a matter of just knowing what is going to happen. But if you still have some flexibility, you can say, well, we got offered to buy. You can still change the nature within the offer. You can change what's structured. So one of the biggest items from a tax point of view is, what are you selling, right? So a business, you're not just selling one thing. You're selling multiple things inside of it, and how you value what is being sold has significant tax implications. And so if you can change and manipulate that a little bit for your favor, that's going to make a big difference on the taxes. So
for some of the negotiating side, remembering that you're always negotiating, and that can be a big part of the transactions, and remembering, okay, given how this cash flow is coming in, how's this going to impact us? And that's where we can help, as you're mentioning, Heidi, in terms of the planning aspect of it. Okay, here's where the taxes are, and possibly giving some pushback to someone like John as well. Okay, mm-hmm. What about this aspect? What about these parts of it? Mm-hmm. So that's an ongoing conversation between your financial advisor, us in that particular event, as well as the accountant, adding value to that transaction.
Well, and that's a big part of negotiation, is finding what both parties want, right? So if you don't need all the cash right up front, you might be willing to take a deferred, which is going to help some of your cash flow, it's going to help the taxes, and it's going to help the buyer as well. Versus if the buyer doesn't care, well, then maybe you want it all up front, right? So you got to look at what are the needs and desires for both parties and try to come in the middle.
So do your darndest to keep a global perspective in this mm-hmm. thing. Keeping in mind both your needs as well as, if you can keep in mind the needs of the buyer, so that you can ensure their success over time. Who wants to sell an asset and see it decline in value over 5 years and go to zero?
Right. Yep. And then going back to your question of saying, okay, what do you do if someone comes right at that moment? It could simply just be understanding what is it going to be that I'm going to get from after taxes, right? So thinking about in fees and transactions, right? So you might, I'm going to pick a number. Say the business is going to sell for $1 million. You're not going to get $1 million. There's going to be fees and transaction costs and taxes mm-hmm. that come along with it. And then understanding, but you might have a purchase price of the business of $1 million, but then you have a checking account and you have other things that are also factored. So it might be more. So understanding what you're really going to get is a big part of it too.
Right, because knowing expectations is key to being helping you make decisions, and knowing what to expect reduces anxiety. I know in my case,
right.
I like that.
Of all the conversations we've had, you know, we talk a lot about retirement plans and IRAs, which can be a significant part of mm-hmm. anyone's asset, but these kinds of transactions, as you've alluded to, what a difference it can make through getting good counsel and good advice mm-hmm. to think about those aspects, perhaps, that you hadn't considered. Mm-hmm. And especially, are we getting an appropriate value? Are we thinking through the process of the transition? Mm-hmm. How do the rest of my family members feel about this? You know, where are they at with this? What mm-hmm. kind of information or help might they provide, even, is what I'm thinking.
And it's all of the above and so much more, right? So when you're in the business of doing it, you're going to have checklists and you're going to have processes. Go down to the little detail items of, okay, you mentioned the 401ks are important. Well, as part of your plan is every year you match your 401k, well, you sell your business in February, well, you're going to want to make sure that you still utilize that 401k before you sell and max it in ahead of time. Now, that's mm-hmm. I can guarantee you not the first thought that came to mind
when we
talked about a business transaction, right? But those are all the items that you have to work through as you go through the due diligence and go through the checklists.
It's just incredible in terms of thinking about those things. And in essence, you're going to the shooting range with all of your supplies, if you will. And you're being prepared, as any Boy Scout will, if you will, mm-hmm. to go out in that transaction and thinking of this beforehand and along the way even, too.
Yeah.
What a huge difference it can make, and as a part of the ongoing transaction, to be able to talk, in my mind, to the new business owner about where you're at with this. And, you know, I've gotten some information from my accountant. I can see that being an ongoing transaction. He's concerned about this. We need to address this as a part of the transaction. And all of a sudden, you're helping both of yourselves, perhaps, and perhaps your own self, if you will, even more, because mm-hmm. you're thinking about that. And we're done already, Ron.
The clock continues to move. One texter said, good advice, great show, so thank you for tuning in. It's Prout Financial Design, new retirement radio, every Thursday, 10 to 11, repeated Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Thanks, Dennis, Heidi, Nathan, and Deanne. And special guest John Sluice from InTrust CPA in Traverse City.